Today's episode is brought to you by Malwarebytes Premium. Protect your computers and devices from cyber attacks 24/7 with Malwarebytes Premium. And go to malwarebytes.com/lock and code for an exclusive offer. That's malwarebytes.com/lock and code.
Your router is kind of the threshold that protects all the devices inside your house. But if, you know, like a vampire, once you invite the vampire across the threshold, all the things inside the house are now, you know, up for grabs.
This is Lock and Code, a Malwarebytes podcast. I'm your host, David Reese. Our main story today is about securing your home network. I want you to think about something that you probably don't think about too often, or maybe ever. I want you to try and guess how many devices in your home right now are connected to the internet. Let's start with the obvious, right? There are your phones and the phones of your spouses or partner and children. There are the computers and laptops of each person in your home and any tablets. That could be your kids' Amazon Fire. And come to think of it, don't you have an Amazon Kindle or other e-reader just thrown somewhere into a drawer? I mean, I know I do. And speaking of things in drawers, I probably have an old phone lying around, or just an old fitness tracker. In counting just the obvious devices, we've already got many, but if you expand further out, which you need to do in this exercise, you have to remember any Internet of Things products. So a Nest thermostat, a Ring doorbell, a baby monitor, an internet-connected TV, or a devoted TV streaming device. And then there's everything smart, smart watches, smart speakers, smart light bulbs, smart fridges, smart washers and dryers. And remember that internet-connected smart juicer from like 10 years ago? I do. It was dumb. By now, you've probably got 10 or 20 or 30 devices floating around in your head, which is a lot, considering that all of those devices have their own security settings, their own manufacturers, their own software updates, and their own scandals when something goes wrong. Smart doorbells have been hacked. Fitness trackers have revealed running routes to the public. But securing everything on this list, which is also known as your home network, can be a daunting task, considering that there are a million articles about just securing your smartphone. One can only imagine the tens of millions of articles there are for securing everything else. So we're going to make all of that easier on you today, and it's not going to include a million articles. Today, to help us all approach home network security, where to start, what to prioritize, how to break everything into manageable workloads, and the risks of putting this work off, we're speaking with Kerry Parker, cybersecurity and privacy advocate and author of the book Firewalls Don't Stop Dragons. And a quick aside here on an upcoming promotion. Kerry also hosts a podcast of the very same name, Firewalls Don't Stop Dragons, and starting very soon, patrons of that podcast will be able to select from a prize bin that includes Malwarebytes premium licenses. So support Kerry's podcast as an annual subscriber and get a chance to receive a one device, 1 year license for Malwarebytes premium. That's one full year of 24/7 cybersecurity, one full year of ransomware protection, and one full year of stopping hackers before they have a chance to get into your device. Okay, enough promotion. Kerry, welcome back to the show.
Hey, man. David, it's so glad to be back. It's been too long. I'm glad to be here talking to your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been far too long. Like I said, I was talking to you right before this started. I think the last time we had you on was helping folks de-Google their lives, right? Remove Gmail, remove Google Maps, remove Google Cloud, all these things that are deeply entangled in our lives. And sometimes you want to take a stand and say, I don't like the level of tracking that this company does for me. What are the alternatives? And We love that. We thought it was great. It's something that happens to, I think, a lot of folks every day, and they just want to understand. And we're coming back with something very similar, which is something that literally surrounds us, you know, I think physically in cyberspace. And we're talking about the home network. And so we're excited to have you. We want to get into so much. So let's just dive in. I think we're going to obviously eventually spend a lot of time explaining how to secure a home network, right? There's the details of it. But before we get into the how, I want to get into the why. And so really simple, why should people secure their home networks?
Well, it's the great first question. Honestly, it's the one that you need to ask in all of these situations. And oftentimes we skip right over that. And it's one that colors the way you approach the topic. So I think that is an excellent first place to start. So let me address that in a little bit of a long-winded way, hopefully not too long, but there are different levels of scope here. Obviously, the most direct one is your security. You don't want your data to be compromised. You don't want your devices to have malware. You want to protect these smart devices that we've all filled our homes with and connect to our home network. That's kind of straightforward. I think most people probably understand that. But there are different levels of scope that I think you might not be thinking about. First of all, if there are compromised devices on your home network, then that means that other devices on your home network, including those of your friends, are coming over to, hey, can I get on your Wi-Fi so I can check my stocks or check my mail or whatever. If they're connected to your Wi-Fi and you've got devices on your home network that are compromised, those devices are now open to compromise as well. People in your family, certainly, people, your friends that are coming over, you're connecting to your Wi-Fi, any other devices that are on your network are now open because, as we're going to learn as we talk today, your router is kind of the threshold that protects all the devices inside your house. But if, you know, like a vampire, once you invite the vampire across the threshold, all the things inside the house are now, you know, up for grabs. So there's that level of scope. But there's even a bigger level of scope that if you pay attention to some of the news stories you hear about distributed denial of service attacks, for example, the way distributed denial of service attacks work are there's this botnet army of compromised devices that some group somewhere, state actors or ransomware groups or whatever, have compromised over some period of time that are now quietly doing their bidding. And they turn these things loose on targets they want to attack in some way, shape, or form. A lot of times those devices are IoT devices that have been compromised, or maybe even home routers that have been compromised. So by protecting yourself and protecting the things in your network, you're not just helping yourself. You're not just helping your family and friends who might be connected to your home network. You're actually potentially helping some other poor sucker out there who's getting slammed with bad traffic by, you know, somebody's DVR or smart light switch has been compromised.
I love that you immediately brought up this idea of like a botnet attack, right? A distributed denial of service attack where devices that connect to the internet can be abused to deliver an attack, right? To deliver an overwhelming amount of traffic to a target. And so that's kind of just, it's that simple. It's using a device that has internet capability as part of a like legion. And it is important to mention this because I think just within the past month, we had a really extremely silly story about perhaps a toothbrush being used in a DDoS attack. It didn't happen. It is this thing where we have seen, I mean, there's a huge botnet attack that we always reference, that I always reference, the Mirai botnet that I think was just taking over like routers, I believe. And
DVRs, I think, originally. And it's still around in different forms.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that is still out there. So to the folks who are listening, you know, don't think that just because there was that one really bad, silly, stupid example that this is not real. It isn't fiction. Internet of Things devices get abused for attacks. So it is real. It happens out there. Sometimes we get a little silly with it, I guess. It is real and it does happen. I think it's fair to say that there's also a lot of people who, right, they don't even know how to define what their home network is. And that isn't a judgment, right? That's right. Because it's a loose term and it's kind of odd and not many people have a lot of interaction with it. And so what my next question is, who is today's advice for then, right? If so many people don't know if this is something they should even worry about, right? What kind of person should be concerned for today's topic?
Yep, another great question. And I want to go back to something you just said too about kind of convenience and these things are kind of there. We've gone to great lengths to try to make it easy to get these IoT devices onto our networks. They've come up with these cute little techniques to quickly, you know, get your device on the network. If it's got a camera, you scan a QR code. If it's, if you've got a little app, you install a little app on your thing, they pair, they get on the network, it does all this magic for you. That we've tried to make it very convenient to get these devices on the network. And a lot of times convenience is at odds with security. Not always. So you, if you do it well, and I would argue that we could be doing better, that's not always the case. But because of this, I think a lot of us have set these things up. I will guarantee you, if you go through the process we're talking about today, you are going to find a device that you'd forgotten about completely. Either that you put on your network years ago and forgot you even had, or forgot that it had an internet connection. It's part of what we're talking about today. You're going to find these things. So who is this for? Really, I mean, the glib answer is for anybody with a home network, which means anybody who has a Wi-Fi router, an internet service, and devices that connect to it. That's kind of a simple, facile answer, but seriously, though, I mean, every device you have in your network is a potential weak link in your security. So if you've got any devices, especially ones that maybe are, you know, IoT devices in particular, we like to say the S in IoT is for security, because there, in often cases, there is none, right? And a lot of these devices are very low profit margin devices. A lot of them are from no-name companies. We just got it because it was cheap or on sale. These companies are fly by night. They don't have any reputations to protect. The security is an afterthought, if it's a thought at all. If you have, especially if you've got IoT devices, you're going to want to go through some of the things we're talking about today, because it's quite possible some of these devices have security vulnerabilities, and you're going to want to do what you can to mitigate or eliminate that risk. All it takes is one compromised device in your network to be a beachhead. You know, your router, we'll talk a lot about your router today, because that really is the main security most of us have for our home networks. But if you can get past that, if you can compromise something on the inside, then kind of all bets are off. You're in trouble. So you definitely want to be doing that. But I also want to make sure I include here, you know, like SOHO market, the small office, home office market, the small businesses. Not only are you protecting your stuff, you need to protect your customers potentially. Maybe you've got an open Wi-Fi hotspot at your cafe, or maybe you offer one in your lobby, or you've got some way for your customers to use Wi-Fi. Now you're possibly endangering them and their devices, but you've probably also got customer data that you need to protect. So it's not just you that you're protecting. So, you know, the easy answer is anybody with a home network, but I want to also make sure we include people, small businesses and things that have networks as well, because that's so popular now. They need to be paying attention to this as well.
I'm glad that you brought in this small business angle, because I do think that there are probably folks who hear, oh, your router might be used in an attack, or your DVR might be used in an attack. And it pains me to say this, but I feel like there's a lot of people out there who would be like, well, if I don't see the end result of that, I don't really care. Right. And that is a big problem that we always have to kind of combat in security, and also certainly in online privacy, but that's something else. But that is a problem. And so I think it's important to relate this also to, hey, this isn't just, you know, your device is going to be abused for something and maybe you won't see it, right? Maybe you believe that that doesn't concern you, but there are many attacks that do concern you, because they're actually on you or on your clients, on your customers, on the people who visit, like you said, your cafe. I mean, every cafe that I go to has, unless it's taking like a public stance against like Wi-Fi, like right. It has a router that you connect to, you know? And this is relatable. All of that is to say as well, let's then dig into how we do this, right? So let's say, like, hypothetical, not so hypothetical, this is kind of me in my home, right? I have a router, right? I have a Wi-Fi extender as well. I have smart speakers. I do have an internet connected TV, because every TV made in the last 10 years connects to the internet. Mm-hmm. We have laptops, we have smartphones, we have a couple tablets. I'm pretty certain we have some smart light bulbs, you know, because I mean, I'm not going to deal. I need green light, you know? No. So there's a bunch of stuff out here. There's a bunch of, there's a bunch of kind of crap lying around. And so what do I do in starting my home network security journey?
Okay. And it is a journey, and it's a bit of a marathon, not a sprint. So I recently wrote a series of articles on this, and I tried to break it down because I wanted to be thorough with this and kind of exhaustive.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a poor term for this, because it will take some effort. But I also wanted to kind of break it into steps and make it have a logical flow. So the way I broke it down was, first you want to scan, then you want to simplify, then you want to assess, and then you want to remediate. Let's start with that first step, scan. So the first thing you really need to do is figure out what it is you're trying to protect. And so that really comes down to, in the home network situation, you need to enumerate all these devices you're talking about. And you have some mental model of how many you have. You just enumerated the ones you thought you had. And even you, as we're going through this, we're like, I think I have some of those, right? And, I'm sure you're not alone. I'm not alone. I'm with you because I've got tons of devices. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But so you really need to understand how many devices you have, because every single one of those devices is something you're going to have to individually evaluate. And I know that sounds like, I know people are already going, oh God, really?
I'm not doing this.
Is that really what this is going to be? And yes, but take your time, be methodical, and just spread it out. You don't have to do this overnight, but it's important to get it right, I think. So if you're going to do it, here's the way I recommend you do it. The first thing you do, step one, is you got to figure out what you have. You've got to make a list of all the devices you have in your home. And here's how I recommend that you do that. First of all, don't forget your router. Your home router is really the main entry point. I like to use castle analogies, right? So it's kind of like the drawbridge. It's the main gate for your digital castle. It's where everything comes in and out, and it's the primary area for defense for your home network. You absolutely want to make sure that that is up to snuff. But I think a lot of people forget, a lot of times your ISP, your internet service provider, also gives you a combo modem router. You may actually even be using that. If you are, I recommend you don't. I recommend you get your own, buy it yourself, and own and operate your own router separate from the whatever your ISP gives you. But more than likely, it's very common today for your ISP to give you a combo modem and router, which means it's got Wi-Fi built into it, even if you're not using it. It's probably on unless you explicitly ask them to turn it off. And you have to ask them usually because you don't have control of it. They do. So don't forget that you've got potentially two routers there at least. If you've got a mesh network, again, like you mentioned, you do. A lot of people do have this now. If they've got a bigger home or they've got dead spots in their home Wi-Fi network, they try to flush it out with their Wi-Fi extenders or mesh routers that give better coverage to your home. All those are part of your, what I'm virtually going to refer to as your router. So that's first. But what you really need to do is figure out all the devices that are connected to that router. There's two ways that I would recommend that you approach this. One is physical, one is logical. So physically, I would walk around your home with a pen and paper or however you want to do it. If you're better doing take notes on your computer, that's fine too. But make a list, a spreadsheet perhaps, of all the devices you can find in your home that you believe are connected to the internet. I say you believe because you may forget or you may miss one or whatever. Mm-hmm. So make a physical list. I would, at that point, go and look at the back of each of those and try to find the make and model number and perhaps even the serial number. I usually take pictures of it because I often find that I forget it later, or wait, did I get that number wrong? Or I look it up, it's not there. Did I write that down right? It's probably easier just to take a picture. Usually on the back or the bottom of any of these smart devices, they've got a make and a model number and usually a serial number. So walk through your home, find these things, try to find them all, get an exhaustive physical list of everything you can see or put your hands on that's in your house. And then you want to do a virtual list. And this is probably the more definitive way to figure out what is in your home network. And that is to go to your router, who is in charge of assigning internal private IP addresses, internet protocol addresses, to every one of those devices that's on your home network. It doles these unique addresses out to each of your devices that asks to be on the home network. Yeah. And therefore, it has a list, what we call DHCP, Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol. Mm-hmm. DHCP is the fancy name for the technique by which a device requests to connect to your home network and is assigned a unique IP address to operate within your home network so all these devices could talk to each other without talking over each other, and then eventually talk to the internet if they wish. So that is really the definitive list. If you want to know what's on your network, is you need to log into your home router, and that involves finding your router's administrative web interface. If you don't know what that is or what that is, if you can figure out the IP address of your router, you could probably just go to that IP address from any browser inside your home, and it should bring up the admin page. If you're not sure, look at the manual that came with your router, or perhaps look it up online, and it should tell you how to be able to connect to this admin webpage. First thing you should do, by the way, is change your admin password. If you never have, if it's not a unique password for your router, a lot of the old ones aren't. A lot of the old ones are literally like admin or admin password, and the bad guys know this. So the first thing you might want to do is change that password to something much, at least unique and hopefully better. But then somewhere you'll have to dig around, because unfortunately each one of these routers has a different interface and they do it slightly differently. Even model to model and year to year they change. But you'll need to find this client list. If you're lucky, the admin interface might have a search bar and you can search for DHCP and hopefully you find your DHCP client list. Otherwise, you might just have to poke around. But once you find this list, it should be a table of all the assigned IP addresses, which That is a list of every device that that router knows about that is currently talking to it. That should be a list. And now, of course, what you want to do is you want to match the physical list to the virtual list. And my guess is you're probably going to find some missing ones, some that you didn't find physically when you're walking around. Oh, yeah, I need to go find that smart light bulb I forgot about that's in the closet. I don't know why you put a smart light bulb in your closet. Yes. Maybe you like having a blue clothes closet. Yeah. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying. You know, so then you got to kind of reconcile those lists. So that is step one.
I would love to take a moment here to really emphasize that this is a good deal of work. I've done this myself, right? And I came at this a slightly different way. I bought a new router. And when I bought that new router, I did not allow any device to connect to the router without permission. This was so that I could force myself to understand what device was being connected. And so at the same time, when looking at that list, right, that DHCP list, after logging into my router's like access page, I could write a note in my router's access page. God, this is getting so like esoteric. It's so weird to explain it, but it's pretty much you're logging onto a web page, right? And depending on your router, the web page is going to say, hey, like you could name this device. Like this device has this address because this address means nothing to me as a human being.
Right.
But you can name what the device is that this address belongs to. And so I forced myself to essentially put every device in my home on the allow list one by one and then name that device because you're right. When you log in to your router's admin page online, which again, is a process in itself. If people don't know what it is, you can go to your router's IP address itself. That'll often get you there. I'm going to be honest here. Sometimes because I've been there before, I just type into my URL bar 192.168. And then surely some past me has done it before.
Right.
Most of it is 192.168.0.1 or .1.1 or, you know.
Right. I've done that too.
So I go through there, and then, right, you see this list, and again, it is the definitive list, as you said, but it doesn't really mean anything because it doesn't say David's iPhone. It doesn't say, David's MacBook Pro. Frequently, it doesn't. It is a ton of work. There are difficult ways to do it, to force yourself. That way, when I made myself allow every single device, that meant I had an accounting of every device that was connecting, right? There was no unknown device no longer connected. And if there were devices in my home that previously were connected to my network before my new router, they weren't connected anymore, and that was fine. That wasn't like I didn't notice any change. That old smartphone that was still kind of plugging around somewhere, if I turned it on, it just said too bad. You can't connect to the internet anymore. And that was fine. That was entirely fine. So again, it's just a long way to say, it does sound like a lot of work and it is a lot of work, but it is important work.
Well, that is actually a fantastic idea for a couple other reasons as well. So there's other ways you could do that besides buying a new router. For example, you could change your Wi-Fi password. Every one of your devices you set up at some point, you had to enter the SSID and password to get them to connect. If you have a router you like and you don't want to buy a new one, another way to accomplish what you're just saying, change the password. All of a sudden, all those devices can no longer connect and you're going to have to go reconfigure them all, which could be a pain, but that will allow you to do exactly what you're saying, where you can methodically go through and say, yes, I'm going to now re-enable you. And now I know exactly what you are and allow you to connect. Oh, I forgot I even had this guy. I haven't used it this long. It's like if something's sitting in your garage in a box for 3 years and you find it again, do you really need that device?
Yeah.
Right. So that's an opportunity to not connect it. But it also, one of the other things I very often recommend people do is most modern routers, I would have to say almost all of them at this point, have the option to have a guest network, which means you can segment your Wi-Fi network into two different parts, never the twain shall meet. They actually, if it's set up properly, the devices on your guest network cannot talk to devices on your regular home network. Mm-hmm. And that can be a security feature if you use it that way. So as you're kind of re-adding your devices, think about this as an IoT device. If all this IoT device needs to do is talk to either maybe another IoT device of its own ilk, maybe three smart light bulbs that all want to be blue at the same time, or webcams that maybe talk to each other for some reason, or other smart devices, them and the internet, you could just put them on the guest network. And then even if they do get compromised, at least they're segregated and compartmentalized.
That's just, I had never thought of that. And another example of that is I have a Sonos speakers, right? Which are smart speakers that connect to one another sometimes so that you can get, let's say, like stereo audio when you're watching your TV. Or you can just say, hey, I want the same music playing in the bedroom and the living room. That's a good way, like you said, to put these together so that even if they're compromised, they're just on the guest network. And that is away from the home network. Again, something that, you know, maybe not every person is willing to step into that immediately, but just a fantastic idea. I never heard of that or thought about that. I did want to move forward here a bit with, okay, so we've got this huge list. We've got this thing that we're trying to understand. I do know, like you said, your second step here, right, of the four steps, like the first is scan, the second is simplify. That sounds fantastic after everything we just spoke about. So what is simplifying my network? What do I do next?
Yeah, and this is a step I think a lot of people miss when they look at doing this. And that is, again, when we're talking about security in particular, you want to, at the end of the day, what you're really trying to do is what we call reducing your attack surface. For every device you have in your network, you probably have N times those numbers of devices in terms of vulnerabilities. Because every one device probably, at least potentially, has more than one vulnerability. It's not one-to-one. So for every device you can eliminate, that is potentially removing a lot of vulnerabilities, a lot of chinks in your armor, a lot of weak links in your overall security chain. So the very first thing you should do before you bother trying to figure out, should I replace this? Should I update its software? What versions does it have? Does it have vulnerabilities? Before I even think about that, why don't I just get rid of them? Which we've already alluded to really here. And that is, so go through and make sure, do I need this device at all? Can I get by without it? Should I be updating this device? Is it really old and so old that it's not getting security updates, for example? And so therefore, I probably shouldn't have it on my network. Or can I take the smart device and make it dumb? Do I need it to be smart? And you might think, well, I spend all this money for this smart device. Why wouldn't I want it to be smart? Well, the one in particular that's my go-to in this particular case is smart TVs. And we've talked about that. It's almost impossible not to buy a smart TV today. Every TV is smart. And there's a reason for that. These companies, and I know this sounds like a tinfoil hat, black helicopter, whatever, conspiracy thing. These companies have admitted, if you look at their financial stuff, they make a lot of their money off of the data that they mine from your televisions.
Yeah.
You know, that's why these things are so cheap. That's why the profit margins are so low, because they're making it up on the back end with data. These, I know this sounds crazy, but there are technologies built into these televisions that can watch what you're watching and report back what you're watching on your television. And they monetize that data. So that drives me crazy. So I never connect my smart TVs to the internet. I just don't. I don't care. I get my Netflix and, you know, my streaming apps through a separate streaming box. I personally like Apple TVs. Are they perfect? No. But I mean, they're definitely better than, you know, Roku and Android TVs and things, I think, in terms of privacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I trust that device, and I don't ever even plug my TV in. There was a recent, I don't know if you saw this, Roku TVs recently have been pestering their clients with a pop-up message that says you must agree to your terms of service before you continue using. And you have one option. It tells you how to write to them in paper if you want to opt out of this.
Wow.
Or, you know, like this, the main change was forced arbitration.
Okay.
And so if you wanted to not be opted in that, you had to write them a letter and it would tell you how, but before you could continue using your device, you had to okay this thing.
Wow.
If I had never plugged that device in, I probably wouldn't have got that pop-up, because it wouldn't have gotten the software update that made that happen, and I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. So I've looked at my devices. I found out what they are. I've removed some from my network where I say, hey, I don't need them anymore. Or I've, you know, when possible, turned off the internet-connected features of the devices. What do I do next? What's my next step, again, in this home network security journey?
All right. So the next step is assessing. So now if we've got our definitive list and we think we have a full list of all the devices that we have in our home. Hopefully we've got the mix of the models and we've simplified. We've gotten rid of the ones we know we don't need to worry about or we don't want to bother worrying about. Now we kind of need to figure out what the status of those devices are. Like, are they too old? Are they too old to get, particularly getting security updates? Some devices will stop getting feature updates, but will continue to get security updates. As long as they're getting security updates, you know, I think that's okay. But that also should be telling you that it's nearing end of life for you. Like, certainly as soon as it gets to the point where it's not even getting security updates, you should not have that device on your home network. That's a black mark against that device. You should be assessing that as, I need to replace or remove this device. You want to start with your router. Make sure you've got an up-to-date modern router. So assess whether or not it's got the proper security features. Like, for example, I would say probably you want something that's no more than 3 to 4 years old, maybe 5 at the outside. Mm-hmm. The way you probably look at that is, does it support at least WPA2? And you can look that up. It's a security standard for the encryption of the connection of your devices to the router. We're starting to number our Wi-Fis now, so I would say probably something that's Wi-Fi 6 and has WPA2 at least, if not WPA3, is probably good enough. And if it doesn't have those features, you probably need a new router. And your router is like your key security portion of your home network. If you have a crappy router, the rest of it almost doesn't matter. And so then look at the devices that are on your list. You've made this exhaustive list of everything on your network. So have a look at each of those and kind of make the same assessments. Are they too old? Are they getting security updates? You could, if you really want to, you could actually look up and see if they have known vulnerabilities. Usually it's a simple Google search. You can look for CVE and then your make and model. That'll probably bring something up if that exists, to give you an idea. And if nothing else, if you see that it's got a long list of them, then maybe your device is not terribly secure and you should be looking for a different brand. So this is the phase where you're going through and now that you've got this exhaustive list, assess whether or not these devices are up to snuff. If they're too old, if they need software updates, you should find out how to update each of these devices. How you update the software on it, if you can. There are some that you probably can't, unfortunately, especially some of the cheaper IoT devices, which is a red flag. But find out what the software they're running, how you update that software, kind of get those notes together. And then I'll just, spoiler alert, the next thing you're going to do is you're going to walk through that to-do list you just created and just start checking those things off.
Yeah. I love that we keep coming back to the router, right? Because I do think I agree 100% that it's like the thing. If the thing you come away with from this podcast, like the one thing is like, maybe I should just get a new router. That's great. That's like, well done. That's a success. Like, congratulations, slam dunk. I think like exactly like you were saying, the capabilities that you're looking for in the router, WPA 2, 3, Wi-Fi 6 capabilities. I remember when I moved a couple of years ago, we had a new internet provider because thankfully, San Francisco does this thing really, really super well where we have competition with our...
you have what now? What's that?
We have multiple internet service providers that compete. And they,
what a concept.
I know, right? And so I don't know if they're a customer of Malwarebytes, right? So I don't know if I could, but I don't have the one that everyone hates, right? And I don't have the other one either, which is great.
And the company that shall not be named.
Yes, exactly. Continuously, they always rank the lowest in the customer service awards or something. It's fun. Everyone knows what company it is. When we moved, I was like, hey, I need to get internet set up. Does this work? Because they actually also provide fiber internet, which I thought is fantastic. It does work. It's great. And I just asked, is my router good enough? And they gave me a super rough ballpark where they're like, if it's 5 years old, just get a new one. I thought that was fine. I thought that was completely okay. I thought that was good. I understand that, look, a router is not, there are routers out there that are hundreds upon hundreds of dollars. And you can definitely sink $300 plus depending on what you want and the coverage and the size of your home. It does suck. It sucks that, sometimes you're going to just have to say, I have to spend $120, this week. I didn't know I was going to have to. But you are secured, it is better. Also, I don't know, we got a router, and I'm not saying it's 100% correlation, but the Wi-Fi felt faster. I don't know. So again, the router is super important here. On the assessment of the rest of the devices in my home, I did want to follow up here though. How do I prioritize, right? What's the difference between, hey, this, this device is kind of old and it's made from a trusted brand, right? I have a Sonos that's pretty old. It's no longer really made by the company. What's the difference between that old Sonos, a brand that is established at least, and let's say I have a smart doorbell that has been hacked by a no-name company, how do I just prioritize what I'm supposed to be doing?
That's a great question. And it's a tough one to answer, to be honest, but here's my stab at that. If I had multiple devices on my network, and I do many, and I was in this position, I would probably try to think like the bad guy. In that sense, bad guys are lazy. They're going to go for the most popular models first. Because if I'm not a super smart bad guy writing my own malware, which most of them aren't, I'm going to go find somebody who's already compromised a given device. And those devices are likely to be the more popular ones. They're the ones that have sold the most product, at least. I would probably also go for the ones that are cheapest. Maybe they're simpler to replace and easier to replace, but also they're probably the name brands that I don't recognize that don't have big reputations to protect. You know, I'd probably start there because if I had to guess, I'd say those are probably the ones with the worst security, the ones that are cheapest and the ones that have no name brands. And so I'd probably just start there because I would think that those would probably be the ones most likely to be insecure. Your computers and your laptops and your smartphones and your tablets, honestly, today, those are pretty darn secure, but certainly by comparison. You know, so I would look at those and then, you know, maybe also factor into that what they cost, how easy it might be for you to replace versus ones that are not. Certainly pick the low hanging fruit. If you can replace, you know, 3 smart light bulbs, but you can't quite afford to get a new smart TV, replace as many things as you can first.
Yeah. As we get into this final step here of actually updating things for, I think, folks who are like, how do I do that? My first step, like my first thing is I would see if I have a connected app, right, for that device. And I would just check if there's a software update, right? That's where I would start. But I wanted to ask you as well, like, how do people go through this process of, you know, where do I, like, how would I update my smart fridge? I actually don't know that. I don't have a smart fridge. But right. How do I go about this long process of updating and fixing any risks that I find?
You will find, I think, unfortunately, that some of these devices either are not able to be updated. Some of them were just not built with that in mind. They came with the software they came with. Some of them have really arcane processes for updating their software. You have to kind of take them offline or connect to them with a special cable sometimes. I mean, some of these are older, but you will find some of these kind of devices. A lot of them now do have connected apps. That is a great way to do it. If you have a connected app, the app should be able to tell you if the device has an update and will probably help you, well, it should, I would hope, help you update the software for that device through the app. That a lot of things are definitely going that way. And by the way, that does throw a wrinkle into the problem of using the guest network in some cases, because a lot of times if your phone is on your regular home network, but the IoT device is on your guest network, they may not be able to communicate that way. You may have to temporarily put your phone on the guest network if the IoT device is on your guest network in order to connect and do this interrogation and potential software update. Since you have the IP addresses of some of these devices, some of them still operate with, they have a little built-in web server. So you could try, if you've got the IP address of that device, which by the way, we didn't really talk about this earlier, but the way DHCP works is unless you nail it down, when these devices restart or every so often, they may actually be assigned a different IP address. So that IP address is ephemeral. That may change eventually. But while you have a current IP address for that, you could try going to that IP address and see if there is an admin web page there that might be able to give you information on what software is installed and maybe perhaps whether an update's available and how to install it. Obviously, you could go to, once you have the make and model, you can go to that device's website and look for information about how to update the software there. Unfortunately, they're all a little bit different. We need to do some more standardization of these things. Some of that may come through regulation, and there are regulations that are floating around for this kind of thing. Some of them are at state level, some are federal level, where they're trying to make this easier to do. They're also trying to make automatic software updates a thing, you know, where if you're going to make a new IoT device, that it needs to be able to check for software updates and update themselves. That would be the ideal situation for all these things, but we're not there yet. So again, you're going to have to kind of go through each one. Everyone, unfortunately, for now, until we have more standardization and more regulation, they're going to be all different and you're going to have to kind of work your way through. We've talked about how to prioritize them. So I would just kind of do that and give yourself time. Do not try to do this overnight. Realize, especially if you've got a lot of these devices, it's going to take some time. Two more things I want to say real quick before I forget. And that is one interesting aspect to a lot of malware for IoT devices in particular, including even things like smartphones, is that a lot of the malware only resides in RAM, which is to say it's not persisted. So if you're at all worried about a particular device, until you get a chance to update the software, restart it periodically. Restarting it will wipe the malware from most IoT devices because it's not persisted. It's not saved in any kind of a hard drive or kind of a situation where it's going to come back when the device restarts. When most devices restart, they save very little information and they come right back up in a kind of a clean slate. And the other thing is we've talked a lot about the router, but one thing I want to make sure that I mention is almost all routers have a firewall. Almost all routers have that firewall enabled by default. But while you're in there messing with your router, make sure that your firewall is on by default and look to make sure that there are no external management interfaces enabled. A common one is what we call UPnP or Universal Plug and Play. That's usually on the inside of your network. In other words, for the devices trying to get out. I would turn that off too, but there are some routers for some unknown reason have UPnP available outside, like from the broader internet, someone could connect to your internet and mess around with the open ports on your firewall. That's horrible. So anyway, just make sure that you've got any external management interfaces. Nobody, you're never going to need to configure your home router while you're traveling, you know, or from anywhere outside your home. So just turn that off. So I just want to, those are some points I want to make earlier that I forgot to get to that I want to make sure I talk about here.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this idea that, yeah, you're never going to need to configure your home router when you're away on vacation. It's just like, yeah, you won't.
Yeah.
As we wrap up here, right, we've been through, well, you know, the home network security journey. Very long, very lengthy, very thorough. And so I wanted to wrap up actually with like a simple question here, which is when you secured your own home network, whenever that last was, what was the most surprising thing that like you learned?
Probably how many devices I had. At one point I was talking about this with, I mean, I'm a software engineer. I'm a retired software engineer and I've got a lot of techie buddies and we love our internet stuff. We love our smart devices and we have lots of them. And at some point we were like, I bet I've got more than you do. And I'm like, okay, well let's find out. And so we all went to our routers. We got the DHCP list and showed them to each other and posted them in our little chat group and I won. And I'm not sure it's a good thing. But I think at the time I had well over 40 and it's got to be more than that now because everything's connected. So I think the first thing I was surprised about is even though I love my tech, I understand these things, I've put these devices all on the network myself. Even I didn't really comprehend how many devices I currently had on my network. I think that was by far the thing that surprised me the most. The other thing that we haven't really talked about is that surprised me somewhat in a slightly different way is most firewalls are a one-way data valve. They protect external unsolicited requests or probes from coming to your devices in your network from the outside. Mm-hmm. What they don't do is they don't really do anything for outgoing traffic, but all your devices are phoning home. I mean, almost by definition, because they're IoT devices, they're connecting to the internet. And so mm-hmm. a lot of them are phoning home, if nothing else, just to check for software updates. So there's all this outbound traffic as well, but mm-hmm. there's when I first put there, you could get something called Lulu, which is a great free, I don't know, it's a reverse firewall or outgoing firewall. I don't know what the proper term for it is, but it basically monitors connections out. And you could put this on your Mac. There's also one called Portmaster, which is great for Linux or Windows, that will help you monitor and control outbound traffic. And when I've done some of that, I've been kind of shocked to see how much my computer apps and things that are running in the background are actually talking out. And I would love to have that functionality on my router because I bet that would seriously surprise me as to see how much outbound traffic there is from my devices that I have no idea is going on.
Well, yeah, I had never thought of that, considered it. And you're right. I think a good way to also contextualize this is that outbound traffic, like your device reaching the internet and not just connecting to your router, but contacting the internet at large, sometimes that's like a malware attack. Like sometimes it's like it's been taken over and it's being used to like connect to another address. Also, this is not, you know, something that happens with IoT devices, but that is something that happens with like regular laptops. Hackers, the way that malware is downloaded is that hackers can essentially use your computer to reach a URL on the internet, and that URL is malicious, right? And then that URL delivers malware. This is, again, just to sort of contextualize the threat of outbound traffic. This not something that I've ever seen happen on an IoT device, but just to, again, say, oh, that's what that is. Yeah, a great point to bring up. Thank you, yeah.
Yep. So I know it sounds like a lot, and it is. I mean, let's face it, there's, especially because we've got so many devices, it sounds like a lot of work. And I'm not going to lie, it kind of is, but it's something that we should still do. And again, do it methodically, do it painstakingly, but do it slowly. You don't have to do this all at once. It don't let it overwhelm you. But and again, I've got the series of articles you could use if you'd like, or we've talked about most of it here, but go through, make good notes, go through the process, take your time doing it. And then you'll think you'll feel better when it's all done. And then if nothing else, you have a much better understanding of your home network, and you know, maybe you'll have a shopping list for things that you want to update or keep an eye out for, because I know I'm going to need this in a couple of years. I think it'll make you feel better to know that you know, I always think transparency and information is important. And so doing this exercise, I think will make you appreciate what you've got going on and feel better that you're more in control about securing your home network. And again, realize that it's not just for you. It's for people that are connected to your network, but it's also for everybody out there who's been a victim of a DDoS attack or a lot of times ransomware and other attacks, they use your computer as hop-off points so that they can hide their origin. So these things are used to hurt other people besides yourself. So you're doing, we're all in this together. Your security and my security overlap. So by helping yourself, you're actually helping other people as well.
Carrie, I just wanted to thank you again for coming on today's show and for making, I think, you know, a very gargantuan topic rather approachable and just going through the details. Look, these are things that they do take time. They are, I think there's an on-ramp that can be intimidating, but they're worth it. And, you know, at the end of the day, what it really is, despite all the technical like language and the logging in and looking at IP addresses, what it is you're making a list. And look, we've all done that before. We can do it again. Yes, it's arduous, but there's so much benefit to it. Again, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Thanks a lot, David. It was fun.
To our listeners, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Until then, stay tuned and stay safe. And remember, you can read all our cybersecurity coverage on Malwarebytes Labs at malwarebytes.com/blog. Finally, our intro music is by Kevin MacLeod from incompetech.com, and our outro music is by Woa from unminus.com. Today's show has been edited by our podcast consultant, Eric Johnson, at lightningpod.fm. Thank you, folks.